This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivisuthi. What do your children fear most? Spiders, strangers, I know, snakes, a whole lot of the dark corner, the dark room. It just goes on and on. But why do our children have fears like that? And is it something we should be concerned about? Dr. Rajini Saramanandan in the studio with us. We're discussing your children's fears. We have the phone lines open today. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 03-77-109,000. You can tweet BFM Radio or you can even text 016-201-9000. Welcome to the show, Dr. Rajini. How are you today?
Fine, thanks, Mira.
You know, how often do parents approach you with anxiety issues in their children? And, you know, at what point do you know that this is a fear that we should be concerned about?
In my day-to-day practice, I often see children have fears with other developmental issues. But occasionally I have perfectly normal children and parents come in saying that, you know, their child has developed a fear to the point that it's actually affecting them socially or in their day-to-day functioning. And I think when we get to that level, I think we definitely need to worry about those fears.
But don't those fears come quite naturally? Why do children fear these things in the first place? What's happening in the brain? Do we know?
It's normal for children to develop fears through different developmental stages in their life. So if we look at a child from about 7 months to about 2 years, a lot of them have separation anxiety. And this is when the brain starts to recognize familiar people, people that they associate with every day, and they start differentiating them from people who are not involved in their lives every day. You know, the brain's a complex organ. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are parts of the brain that detect familiarity, which then is associated with particular feelings in the brain, the emotional response that you get from that. And as a result, the child develops that attachment. So when a complete stranger comes along, that child who has developed these abilities is able to distinguish that, okay, this is not someone I know, and hence that fear starts to develop. So that, we would say, is normal. And in fact, throughout their ages in preschool life and even just before they go to school, there is some level of separation anxiety when they're faced with unfamiliar circumstances. Other fears start to develop depending on the child's age, depending on their cognitive ability, their ability to imagine, to comprehend and interpret stories. So if you go further along a child's life, when they hit the age of two, they start being scared of bad people. They start being scared of the dark. They start being scared of animals. When we get to sort of four and five, they start being scared of ghosts. Mm-hmm. So more abstract sort of things. They start being scared of, you know, even things like dying and death when they start to hear stories about it. And then you get to sort of the school age times where they start fearing being alone, not having friends, or vice versa, having to stand up in the front of the classroom, being in public, being put on the spot. So these fears are what we call normal fears that children go through.
But the causes, are they because of something that has an experience that has brought about the fear, or is it because of genes, or is it just the environment? What is it?
Okay, so it's a multifactorial thing. You know, lots of theories have been postulated, even some theories that fears are actually innate and a sort of a protective mechanism, which is true to some extent. I mean, if you have no fear of anything, you know, that would be difficult. If you don't have a fear of strangers, kids would be kidnapped very easily. So in some way, some of these fears are innate, and but we know now that when fears become a problem, that's because of genetic factors. So we know there is an element of genetic factors. We know that it is as a result of negative experiences, either true experiences that they've gone through themselves or negative thoughts that have been put forward to them. So if I give you an example of a fear of, say, dogs. So there's some genetic element to that. They say that, you know, parents who are fearful of dogs have children who are fearful of dogs. And some of it is the parent's reactions when they meet the dog.
Yes.
And that transfers onto the child. And at the same time, when parents threaten their children, if you don't eat your food, I'm going to ask the dog to come and bite you. Or, you know, things like
or
that.
Or go stand in the dark.
Yeah, you know, go stand in the dark. Yeah. So that will perpetuate that fear.
And so our children can inherit our fears?
Yes, children can inherit our fears. And we often say that some nervous children or children who are more prone to anxieties, there is a genetic element to that as well.
Okay. And what are some of the fears you often see that we shouldn't be concerned about? It's just a phase. They will get over it.
I think, you know, things like fear for animals, for example, it's quite normal for some children to fear particular animals, you know, because they read about it in stories, they associate certain animals with looking like certain characters that they've read about in stories. So, for example, if you read Red Riding Hood, and if you look at some of the books, the fox looks like a dog, or particular dogs that you meet in the street. Mm-hmm. So then that child may be fearful about that situation. I wouldn't say don't worry about it completely, but we shouldn't be fueling that fear by threatening them with it. So some of these fears improve as they become used to seeing the particular dog, for example.
And what determines whether a child is going to cope well with a fear? For an example, a horror movie. Some of them watch the horror movies, they come out of it, they're fine. Yeah. But then for some children, they start developing fears. What differentiates the two children?
I think some of it depends on, for example, the experience the child feels when they're watching the movie. If they are surrounded by people who are also fearful and start screaming, and you know, there are all these negative behaviors that they're watching, that may fuel the fear further. If that child, of course, there's some, you know, particular children have different imaginations that may carry their fear further when they start imagining themselves in that situation. For some children, they come out and they've dissociated themselves from the movie. Many kids go on to imagine what if they were in that situation. And there's this situation where they start discussing it. And depending on who they discuss it with, sometimes it can positively or negatively affect them. And I think one of the things we do know is if we discuss some of these fears with children early, and if we take the horror movie, for example, and we put it in perspective that, you know, this situation doesn't really happen, or if it does happen, these are the things you can do. The movie's different. It's meant to make the whole thing exciting. Then that helps that child get over it.
With the, you know, technology being so in our face and children being exposed to it, your iPads and, you know, and all of that, that sort of stimulates the mind.
Yes.
Even children as young as 2 years of age.
Yes.
Could that help or stimulate areas of the brain to create more fears for children?
Yes. And I think this is where we need to be aware. For example, exposing a two-year-old to, say, a movie that's violent, we know that creates that violence, that perpetuates that violence streak in them to some extent in terms of their displaying aggressive behavior. So in the same way, we may be predisposing children to fears as well. You know, a two-year-old watching something like arachnophobia, I would say that's a disaster, really. So in a way, yes, but actually technology has also helped in terms of treating some of these fears sometimes. So this is where parental control of technology is very important.
And most of the time when parents come to see you, are they overreacting to these fears that their children are experiencing, or is it legitimate that it is indeed something you should be concerned about?
For many of the ones who actually, I would say I see both sides. So there are children where the parents are worried, and I would be worried with them. And in fact, there are children where the parents are worried but deal with it in a negative way. But then I also see parents who take certain normal fears very lightly, and I worry when the way they are reacting to it is actually going to make that fear worse. So I see a whole variety of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our role is so important as parents.
Very much so.
And sometimes it's very hard when you have no control over it. And when you have your own fears,
yes,
that makes it more difficult trying to manage your child's fears.
Yes, definitely.
How do you work with parents like that?
Okay, I mean, for majority of parents who come seeking help, usually they're ready to accept help to some extent. So then it's easier to work with that. And one of the things we counsel parents about is making sure they don't show their fear to the child if the child truly has a significant fear that's affecting them. I mean, what we don't want is for that to tip over into becoming a phobia.
Yes.
So we tell parents, okay, take, for example, fear of the dog. You may be scared yourself, you know, of this barking dog. But you try and internalize that fear to show the child that it's okay, and maybe even teach them protective strategies like, okay, the dog's over there, so we're just going to cross the road and walk on this side of the road. You are acknowledging that we're scared of the dog, but you're not showing them the fear and the...
You're in control.
You know, you're in control of that situation. And I think that's important. You know, we may never get rid of the fear completely, but you're teaching the child to be in control of it so that it doesn't take over their lives.
Are there any benefits at all that is brought about by fear?
Yeah, fear is a protective mechanism to some extent. You know, I think to some extent it's good to be fearful of a particular animal so it protects you. You don't go touching that animal and it ends up attacking you. But at the same time, you know, for example, like I said earlier, strangers, you know, if kids are completely fearless of strangers, I would be worried that that child may be taken advantage of.
And there are some children like that.
Yes, there are, definitely.
Do we know what determines a child who's terribly free with strangers and one who isn't?
In that sort of situation, it's usually associated with other developmental disorders to some extent. I mean, if we see children who are developmentally delayed, so their social maturity is also delayed, they may not be aware of social dangers. And you need to teach those social dangers to children like that. Children who've had brain injuries and it's affected certain parts of their brain, they are totally disinhibited sometimes and they show their affection very openly, even at the ages of 5 and 6 when you expect that children are able to control their display of emotions to people. And you may need to specifically teach those children those skills.
Okay. And we're discussing your children and their fears. When does it actually become a phobia? When do you classify it as a phobia is what we're going to be discussing up next. Our phone lines are open, 0377 109 000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162 019 000 with a question. So do that right now and we'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. We have developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanathan in the studio with us. We're discussing your children's fears and phobias. That's one of my first question, Dr. Rajini. How do you differentiate a fear from a phobia?
Okay, a fear is something that triggers this emotional response in you that makes you want to avoid that particular object or animal or situation, but that's where it ends, sort of thing. In a phobia, it affects you functionally and socially. So your avoidance level will affect how you function depending on what age you are. So if you have a child who's afraid of a dog, that's quite common, but it doesn't mean that child's not going to go out of the house just because there are dogs on the street that come out now and again. So it depends, and you know, that would differentiate a phobia and a fear.
Okay. Anna, you have a question about your son. Anna,
hello?
Are you there?
Yes.
Yes. You have a question about your son?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Okay, he's 6 years old, and I first noticed that he seemed to be having these fears after he saw some movie, like you rightly pointed out just now. And after that, he's been afraid to sleep on his own. Well, actually, he doesn't sleep on his own. He sleeps with his sister. Even that he can't do now.
Okay.
He won't go into a room pick up his toys and bring them downstairs. He's afraid. He's just afraid of everything. So I'd like your views on
it. How old is he again? Her son is six, and he seems to have this severe, you know, fear. Any trigger factors, Anna?
Yeah,
that's what I think was the cause. They were watching this one of these horror movies,
right,
on the iPad, and you know, that face came up, one of those scary faces. And
yeah,
it's been like this. I mean, I think that was about almost a year ago, and it seems to have. But of course, when I tell him, I've spoken to him, I've told him that, look, this is just a movie, all of those things you said to say just now, it doesn't seem to have, you know, helped.
Any questions for Anna?
Yeah, Anna, can I just ask, does you know, for example, you said he's scared to go and get his toys from downstairs. Would he cry and throw a tantrum if you were to be firm about it?
No, he won't. I haven't been totally firm.
Ah, good. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's very common for six-year-olds to be scared of the dark, and especially if they've seen, you know, this sort of scary movie and stuff. It's good that you've talked to him about the fact that that was just a movie. What you may need to do is gradually, you know, desensitize him, so to speak, in terms of going up or down on his own. So you may be able to say things like, okay, I'll follow you down, but I'll wait, you know, at the bottom step while you go and get your toy, and then gradually build that up so that you're further and further away from him. And, you know, make a big deal out of the fact that he's gone to do something like that
right,
as well. You know, and if he is scared, say, to go to bed alone, again, you know, suggest to him that maybe he can have a light on in the room, a small night light that is on throughout the night, or a bathroom light, so that he can then feel secure. And again, you may want to sort of say to him, okay, for the first few nights, I'll come in and I'll be sitting on a chair next to you. Then the chair gets further away from the room, so to speak. Yeah, so it's not something that you know, and that's important when we're dealing with fears. I don't think he has a phobia per se. You're probably describing, you know, a third of children at the age of six, I would say, especially if they've been exposed to movies, or, you know, being kept in a dark room for whatever reason. So, you know, it's something, when you deal with these fears and phobias, it takes weeks, sometimes months, before you get over them.
Okay. Thank you very much, Anna. Thank you for calling. Does that mean that, you know, Anna's son could maybe on his own, without intervention by parents, will he get over it on his own?
Some children do, and some children, it just starts to get worse. And I think, you know, as parents, we need to be aware of that. With some children, yeah, they do get over these things. Sometimes they have to. For example, I know of situations where parents say, you know, I just ignored him and let him get on with it, and just said, no, sorry, you can't come to my room, and the child then seems to get over it, mm-hmm. you know. But there are some children who don't. And I can say, even with my three kids, having been through different fears with them, they all react differently to how they get over it, or how I have to deal with it sometimes.
Right. Hafiz has a question. He says his child is 18 months old. She isn't scared of the dark now, but he's afraid that she may come up with that fear later on.
For sure, Hafiz. I mean, I think all children go through that fear of the dark at some point. So, you know, when you start seeing that fear coming in, you start taking precautions, or putting in reassurances for children, depending on what age they are.
Can we do anything to prevent the fear from, you know, developing at all? Knowing that, you know, a lot of children are afraid of the dark, and can you do anything
to prevent that?
Yes,
that it's part of being of developing. Actually, some fears are just normal developmental milestones, I would say. And in fact, if children don't develop certain fears, I would get worried mm-hmm. about that. That those are red flags for me. So being scared of the dark, I think, is a good thing sometimes.
And sometimes we have parents who feel that these fears are being played up because children don't want to go to school, or there are some, you know, specific reasons behind that.
Yeah.
And how do you tell whether it's genuine or not? And this is the part where sometimes guilt plays with parents.
Yeah, and I think you do need to look. So say, for example, you have a child who started primary school and, you know, things are going fine, and then suddenly this fear of the dark comes in when the child's never been scared of the dark before, and you can't find specific triggers. You do have to think, is that child scared of falling asleep because the next day when they wake up, they have to go to school, and there may be something in school. So this requires parents to be a little bit more astute. And I have come across that situation where it was the case in one of the children that came to my clinic. It was actually the sibling of a child that I was dealing with. And as it turns out, she had started in Standard 1, things were going fine, and a few months down the line, an incident with a friend. So just a tiff, you know, girls being girls, don't want to friend you, being excluded from a group, and this child was very sensitive and felt that she was being isolated, and gradually she started this. And initially, the parents saw it as a fear of the dark, anxiety-provoking, and they weren't sure what was happening. And it's only when I said to them, go and observe, does she have this fear at weekends? Can you persuade her to sleep at weekends in her room? You know, she was coming into their bedroom. And they've said, oh, yes. And they themselves suddenly realized, oh, it's about going to school, mm-hmm. maybe. And they worked out and gradually were able to tease that out without having to see a therapist or a psychologist.
So you really need to be sensitive.
Yeah, you do.
And to think a little out of the box. Yeah. So sometimes emotions overrule everything else.
Yes.
Take over your head. Stephen, you have a question.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, yeah. Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, my name is Stephen here.
Yep.
Yes, I would like to ask doctor regarding my grandson.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. My grandson, his age is now coming to 4 years old.
Uh-huh.
Now, since as a child, yeah. So whenever there is an occasion where we, a birthday occasion especially, where we have the cake brought in with a lighted candle,
mm-hmm.
and he starts to yell and scream.
Oh.
Yell and scream, and then when we sing the birthday song, he gets louder, and so I'm wondering whether is this a fear or is it a phobia,
uh-huh.
and will this fear or phobia go away as he grows up?
Any other question for Stephen?
My question. Yes.
Can I ask if there are? Is this only for his birthday or for anyone's
birthday? So we have come to a stage where anyone's birthday, we try, if we can, we won't bring him. If we have to bring him, then probably we have to take him out of the house somewhere else so that he won't see this singing and this
mm-hmm.
candle. But when after it, you bring him in, it's okay.
What if it's like a wedding dinner and everybody's doing a yum sing?
That is all right. That is all right. He will be inside. He goes out. He goes to the mall. Not nothing. But if it is a birthday occasion, the moment you bring in the candle and you bring in the cake and put it on the table, he will be looking at the cake, and then you light the candle, he will start to scream and cry.
Can I also ask, has he had any bad experience with flames or firecrackers or anything like that?
No.
No?
No, no.
So he's always been like this since he was young?
Yes.
Okay. What about his own birthday?
I think he started, may have started from his own birthday, I think when he was 1 year old. Or 2 years old, when he could understand, bye-bye.
He knows we're talking about
it. After school.
Uh-huh. Okay. Go ahead.
So, when he was able to sit around and appreciate surroundings, so the parents gave him a birthday treat by inviting his friends and also he started one, and I think the first one, the first time he started, so continuously in any birthday occasion, he will cry and scream.
Okay, so he doesn't
So
he doesn't have his own birthday cake anymore.
So yeah, so we are thinking that is quite funny, because even his own birthday he cannot.
He cannot
stand it.
Exactly. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Can you? Okay. I will listen.
Sure.
To you through the radio. Okay?
Thank you very much,
Stephen. Yeah.
Thank
bye.
You very much.
That, I mean, that's unusual. An unusual fear, and I'm not sure what the trigger was. Of course, I would also want to know whether, you know, there are other social situations where Stephen's grandson would feel anxious. You know, how do you deal with that? I would start off by maybe playing back a video of one of the birthday parties that where there was no crying and screaming, maybe when he wasn't around someone else's birthday party, just to show him that, hey, this is a fun and enjoyable, you know, event. And I would probably simulate a birthday scenario, maybe have a pretend cake, with teddy bears and things like that, and a pretend candle, don't light it, just to gradually see what it is that may trigger and see whether he accepts it in that way as well.
Okay. When we go back to phobias, can it incur a lot of damage psychologically and socially to children?
Yes, for sure. And that's why we call it a phobia. And if left untreated or unchecked, it can, you know, carry on into adulthood and lead to a lot of social difficulties as well.
But what usually triggers a fear to develop into a phobia?
If, for example, we don't deal with it early enough, we certain fears may be there, and if we make it worse by adding on to those negative thoughts, or maybe there's an incident that sort of tips the balance. And, you know, if, I mean, of course, we talked about the genetic element to it. If the child's own coping or mechanisms or resilience is not there to deal with it, it can go on to develop into a phobia.
And when do you resort to maybe medication to manage phobias?
In children, we rarely need to use medication. We would initially start by using desensitization, relaxation techniques, through sort of psychologists use this method of cognitive behavioral therapy, where they work to change those negative thoughts into positive ones. And we would only use medications if they are causing things like panic attacks, so physical symptoms of a child, you know, getting sweaty, shaking, those sort of things, then we would use medication to aid with that. But we would still need to use those behavioral techniques eventually.
But medication is always temporary, isn't it?
Very temporary. And we hardly use them in children per se.
Okay. And how long does it take for fears to go away?
Like I said, weeks, sometimes months, depending. Some fears, as a child grows up and they start to rationalize and cognitively be able to see that certain situations are not real, for example, ghosts or, you know, then those fears will dissipate. Certain fears may stay with that child. Yeah.
And how do you, in some cases, when you talk about ghosts, and I'm going to be, I mean, some may think I'm silly here, but what if they really are seeing something?
Yeah, well, then...
Then how do you determine whether it's a fear and it's something real, you know?
Children
have that, they always say children have that ability to see
things, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we sometimes have to accept that they may be seeing things, but we reassure them that these things are not going to interfere with their lives, you know, in a negative way. Yeah.
Because you find children, you know, sometimes having the imaginary friend,
yes,
and all of that. So, yes. Okay. So, and just to think about children who don't get over their fears, then what happens?
So then they become phobias.
Even with intervention?
Even with intervention, yeah. We do have, children who have had fears and go on to develop anxiety disorders, phobias, panic attacks as they get older, despite having that intervention. Most of the time, behavioral interventions do work. But there are a group of children, about 5%, where they go on to have these difficulties into adult life.
Okay. And if you're an adult and you still have fears, what do you do?
I think, you know, don't give up.
Same principles apply?
Yeah. So, you know, there's the role for behavioral therapies. There's the role for desensitization, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And there's also a role for medication if necessary.
Okay. And what do you find parents don't quite understand about children and their fears?
I think parents don't understand how much we may be contributing to them. We can educate parents, but we always have to remember that it's not only parents and children. You know, it's about educating everybody that's dealing with the child sometimes. That's important.
So the grandparents.
Exactly. Teachers, you know. It's very important that when we're dealing with children who have fears and phobias, that we make sure that everybody around them has to be on the same side in terms of dealing with it. Because it can just be one person out of the many that may be perpetuating this fear.
And sometimes with fears, I've always applied this principle, Dr. Rajani, and I could be wrong. I just don't pay too much attention to it.
Yeah.
And if I see it persist, then
yes,
there could be a reason, a pretty good reason for it.
Yes.
And my children sometimes think I don't really care as a result. But
you
I'm
and
always
me both.
Watching. I was just watching at the corner of my eye, pretending to ignore, but, you know, hoping to catch signs as to how long this is going to go on.
Yes.
And I think that works quite well.
Yes.
I think jumping at every little thing that happens gets them panicky as well.
Yeah, even more, you know, and
anxious.
More anxious. In fact, you know, this is something we have to remember. A lot of research shows that children pick up negative thoughts and negative feelings much faster than they do positive thoughts and positive feelings. Research shows that now.
Is it because we express it so easily?
I think so. And I think maybe it's something to do with the brain and how we respond to things.
I always felt it's also our energy.
Yes.
Children sense your energy.
Very much so.
Yeah. And the minute you're afraid, they know.
Yeah. We always give the example of, you know, the parent who's anxious with the baby, what do? They repeatedly rock their child,
yes.
Right? And that child then senses that movement and the pulsations from the parents and the sweaty palms and, you know, things like that. And that child will start getting more anxious and start crying more.
Yeah.
So,
okay. So your message on to anyone who's got children who have fears, maybe even phobias, what would you like to say to them?
I'd like to say fears can be a normal part of development. And as you say, Mira, most of the time we can just ignore and, you know, but it's important that we don't perpetuate these fears and take them seriously once they start to interfere with your child's functioning in life, you know, at home, in schools, in wherever they are, in whichever environment they are.
And that's when you know it's a red flag.
Yes.
And you need to think about some kind of intervention. Thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Rajani. Dr. Rajani Saranandan, a developmental pediatrician, talking to us about our children's fears and phobias on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.